Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,800 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special returning guest is Harrison Viers Newberry, author of Imminent Shift in Consciousness and Awakening to the ET Phenomenon. Imminent Shift is all about exploring the truth about uncovering the secrets of our world and our own consciousness. What has been kept from you by other people, as well as your self-taught fears, is a roadblock to your full potential. It's time for an awakening to learn your higher purpose and how it relates to others. Harrison Viers Newberry has been a truth seeker of answers for decades. His questions are ones we all ask at some point in life. He reveals the results to readers of his books. For more than 40 years, he has traveled many paths seeking enlightenment, answers, and understanding. He walked the journey of a shaman for years, which took him high in the Andes mountains of Peru and deep into the Amazon jungle. For more information, you can visit his Instagram account, Harrison Viers. That's Harrison, V-I-E-R-S. Okay, with that, Harry, thank you for joining us again, and I'm happy to have you back.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be back with you, Rob.
Oh, that's great. Well, now, we did have one show of Imminent Shift, on Imminent Shift, and that was on April 28th. And if people want to listen to that one, they can go to our archives page and just find that date. But in that show, we really didn't have a whole lot of time to get to the ET phenomena part of your book. So that's what we'll be doing today.
Yes, that's correct. You know, there was something that prompted me to speak almost entirely about the shift that's taking place right now. And, you know, the book is in two parts, and probably in retrospect, it should have been two books. And we even discussed that at the time. But in the second part of the book, there's more information than in the first part. And some say almost too much. You know, it's like an encyclopedia of details on UFOs, UFO history, reverse engineering, etc. But the ironic thing is that there's volumes that I could not include. I just ran out of space. The book was going to be a war and peace novel otherwise. So hopefully we can touch on some of those things today.
Yeah, that'll be great. I'm definitely looking forward to talking to you about it. And then, of course, between then and now, there is that release of the new Steven Spielberg movie, Disclosure Day. So it seems to be very timely for our conversation today.
Yes, it does. It's almost perfect. My wife and I went to see that movie on Sunday, and I've had countless people contacting me for my assessment, and, you know, it's a great movie for the masses, especially for people who are not that well informed on this subject, you know. But, you know, for those who are informed, including myself, I mean, it didn't really offer anything new, and I could criticize it, but there's no way, just like in my book, Robert, there's no way they could have possibly included all the details. But they did touch on things like the Roswell incident, which was denied for years. And in my book, Imminent Shift, I reveal that yes, that incident did, in fact, occur. Insiders have sworn that it did, and people that were there at the time later came out and and stated emphatically that it did indeed occur. But what they showed in the movie were bodies. There were four bodies that were taken from the first crash. And I say the first crash, that's the one that most people know of as the Roswell crash, but it was actually north of Roswell in Corona. But there was a second crash. There was actually two spacecraft that had collided, and they didn't even know about it, but they found the second one in 1949, and it was pretty much intact, and they later flew it. But the big thing they didn't release is the fact that there was one member of that crew on that spacecraft that survived. And they took him to Los Alamos, and he lived until 1952, so about 5 years. And they had a pretty tough time communicating with him at first, but once he realized that they weren't going to harm him, he relaxed, and he was able to learn our language, the English language, very, very quickly. And the more he learned, the more he was able to communicate, and they started bringing components of the craft into him, and he explained them, and one of those components was a communication device, and they didn't know what it was. And before he died, excuse me, he had shown them how to use it, and they ended up getting into communication with these people. He was called, by the way, he was called Eben, for extraterrestrial biological entity, Eben. And he came from a planet in that's about 39.5 light years from Earth in the Orion system. And they got into contact with his leaders, if you will. And in 1965, they did an exchange program. Now, he had died, but they were very impressed at how well he had been treated and so forth. So we sent, and the only question isn't whether we did this. The question is whether we sent 3 of our people or 12. But the original documents that were seen showed that there were 12, and I believe it was 12. I don't know where they get 3 at, but that's the argument, just for the record. And they called it Operation Serpo, for the name of the planet, but in fact it was originally called Operation Crystal Knight. And they sent these guys, one of their crafts came here, and they left one of their people here that I was told that it still remains here. It is working and collaborating with their special access projects in reverse engineering. But they went to Serpo. It took them 9 months. They got very sick on the way, and they lived there. They didn't return until 1977. Two of them died there, one in a crash, trying to fly one of their crafts, and I forget how the other one died, and the rest returned. Most of them died within a few years because this planet had binary suns. It was almost never dark, and when they first arrived, they landed somewhere around what would have been the equator. And they were miserable. It was extremely hot, 24/7. And eventually they moved them to the northern part of the planet, a planet where it was like 70 degrees, and they were much more comfortable. But they had to build places for them underground because there was no darkness. And they were allowed to go pretty much wherever they wanted. But the commander, he actually lived, I think it was until 2008, just a few years ago. He was the only one that survived, lived a fairly normal life. And he did talks around various UFO conventions and spoke with the greatest praise for this race of people. I mean, he had nothing but positive things to say, that they were extremely benevolent, highly advanced spiritually, and yet they lived very simple lives, and most of them looked the same. They even had one of the people that revealed this was shown photographs of their planet. It looked very desert-like, you know. I didn't see the photographs. They didn't show them, but this guy had seen them and described some of them. And the word is that the Russians also did an exchange program. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But we definitely sent people, and this, of course, has been kept secret for many, many years, but it came out of the Department of Defense. Mm. That's the guy that blew the whistle on this, had worked and retired from. So,
wow. You know, that really kind of goes contrary to a lot of the fear that we've been fed, that, you know, these alien cultures are basically going to be here to end us as a you know, human race.
Well, the people that are putting the fear out are the people that are maintaining the secrecy, because they don't want this out, because they're making billions, trillions of dollars off of all this reverse engineered technology that they have acquired. Are there evil aliens? Absolutely. We live in a duality universe, meaning for everything there's a polar opposite, male and female, duality, hot and cold. With emotions, we have love and fear. And we've been manipulated into a fear-based reality that we exist in versus love. But as we rise and ascend in consciousness, we will move. There will come a time when we'll reach a tipping point and move more into a love-based reality. But the people that are in the know, people who were former members of the secret space program, the SSP as it's commonly referred to, have seen and met with literally hundreds of races, at least seen them, you know, in a meeting. There's a, and I think I wrote about this in Image Shift, there's a space station by Jupiter. It's cloaked. You can't see it with a telescope, but it's very large, and it's for commerce. It's for trade, and we're trading with these various civilizations. One of the interesting thing is one of the things they love to get from us is fear. They love our fear.
Mm. Wow.
And children's clothes. Because many of them are smaller, you know. But the story is this: the ratio of good to bad, evil versus benevolent, is 95 to 5. About 5% of them are evil, but 5% of them are very benevolent. And we don't have to worry, because there's a blockade around Earth right now of thousands of ships, and these are the benevolent ones that are here to help us, because we are in the time of the shift and ascension into the fifth density, and they're here to help that process along and liberate our minds and our souls. The evil ones are being blocked out. They're stopped. Every craft coming and going from Earth is stopped. And if they don't have a good purpose or reason, then, you know, they're not allowed out or in.
So, well, that's a good thing.
Right now.
Yeah. Now, You've indicated that we have many ET races here now, and basically five at least that the government has acknowledged. So can you tell us a bit about each of those races?
Well, I don't know how much I can tell you about them. I can give you a very general description
Okay.
what I've been given. But the first thing that's important is there are many walking on the surface right now amongst us. They're working in industries, they're working in government, and they look just like you and me, Robert. They're different, but at a observation, you can't tell the difference. They're human-looking people, and the Tibetans say that there are thousands of civilizations in the Milky Way galaxy that have human-looking people, and there's others like the Arcturians and the Andromedans that are human-looking, but you could clearly see they're not human. There's something different about them, skin color, et cetera. But there's also a large group that are working in our underground special access projects, working along, collaborating with, the industries are what's controlling most of this, and reverse engineering. But the thing that caught me some years ago when I learned of this, years ago there was a movie by Jules Verne, Journey to the Center of the Earth. And there are actually civilizations. I'm now convinced of this after doing a ton of research. The Earth is honeycombed. And there are pockets under the surface of the Earth that they call it the Agartha network, and they run from 7 to 15 miles under the surface of the Earth. And some of these pockets are huge. They have their own ecosystem. It rains, it snows. There's plants and animals down there that we don't have on the surface because it's a different chemical structure. And there's one race, they call them the raptors. They think they may have been left over from the dinosaur era. They look like reptilians, but they're not. The dinosaurs look like reptilians. But you don't want to go wandering into their territory, I'm told, but our people have met with them and had some dealings with them, and basically they're benevolent. There's also the ant people that the Navajo and the Hopi talked about. We think it was the time of the Great Flood where they took them underground, and these stories are prolific. They're everywhere out in the West that they took them underground and fed them and cared for them until it was clear on the surface and they came back up. And there's countless myths of them coming from under the surface of the earth. Then there's a group that looks like us. They're human looking, and they think they were left over. They had escaped from when Atlantis was destroyed, and they had gone underground and had chosen to live there underground. And highly sophisticated, high technology, and cities built into the living rock under the surface. I mean, it's like a whole other world down there. Now, I know this is hard to believe for most people. It's hard for me to believe. But there's just too much evidence to this. And, there's also the aquatic beings that are here. There was a submarine captain I saw in an interview, and he talked about other submarine captains that had seen the same thing. down in the Indian Ocean, not far from Antarctica, they were as deep as they could go. They wouldn't reveal the depth, but they were at their maximum depth. And there's portals, glass portals. And one of them come running up to the captain and said, "You got to see this." And they had to go deep down into the sub and crawl up to this portal. And they looked down, and it was lit up like New York City. And
Wow.
when they came back and reported it, obviously somebody already knew it was there and told them, basically, this is classified and you are never, ever to mention this again. But they know and have actually had some bodies. There's one species that look like mermaids. So that myth of the mermaids originated in fact, in truth. They don't come to the surface because of the light, because I mean, we're talking miles under the ocean, and there's no light, and there's also portals down there, and ETs are coming and going through these portals.
Wow. No.
Some of this information is hard to believe, but I learned a long time ago to not discount things that sound incredible like this, you know, and I just kept digging and I found countless sources that backed every bit of this up. We know that, I mean, it's common knowledge that the military has dumps, deep underground military bases. And these bases are all over the world. Russians have them, Chinese have them, and they're huge underground. But what most people don't know is that there is a train system, they call it a maglift, that runs all over the country underground. And I mean, these things are extremely fast. Like you could go from LA to New York in an hour.
Wow. We could use that up on the surface for sure.
Well, that's how they're getting around, and they got all these major military bases linked up. But they've gone down on missions. A guy named Emory Smith worked in the Deep Access Underground Special Access Projects, and he, you know, once his clearance got raised enough, and he's spoken a lot about this. He's on Gaia TV, on Cosmic Disclosure. And he went on missions underground where they used portals to get down there. And they brought back specimens of plants and animals. And the drug companies are backing it because plants are where a lot of pharmaceuticals, recover. Portions of them are used to make drugs. And some of the drugs that we're using actually came from plant specimens from underground and on other planets because they've used portals to travel to other planets. Yeah, we also, most people heard about the movie Stargate. And if you saw that movie, you know, they step in and they go through this tunnel. That's kind of a traumatic effect on, you know, the person traveling, but in reality, you take a step and boom, you're there instantly. And, you know, Emory Smith said the only thing he felt was some inner ear pressure variances that made him a little shaky, but you know, it dissipated and went away within a couple of minutes. But they didn't tell them where they were going and that where the planet was that they were going to, and they would only stay for maybe 30 minutes, and they didn't go too far from the portal either, because these portals open and close. They don't stay open all the time. It depends on the orbit of the planets and conjunction with the galaxy and as to when they open. So if they close up on you, you might be there a while waiting to get to come back. But they think that's that's how a lot of the ETs are coming and going. They're not coming here on spacecraft into the planet.
Yeah. Now, Stargate was one of my favorite movies, you know, and I really loved the idea of that portal being able to move people from one spot to another, you know, at massive distances. To me, it seems that that was one way that could conquer the idea of great distances in a short time.
Well, it's there. I started studying sacred geometry, and it's the most powerful set of tools to awaken yourself and to activate the power centers we have within our body that I've ever found, I've ever encountered, but I'm not going to go right there because it's a long topic. But the fact is that everything in the universe is in a matrix, a field, a quantum field, as the quantum physicists say. And it's all energy and consciousness. And the ancients called it the net. Masters of the net were the ones that were experts in this, especially in Egypt. And then the Greeks were educated by the Egyptians, and Plato was huge into this. He had a sign over his door where he taught classes that said, to paraphrase, anyone without knowledge of geometry cannot enter. And where lines, there's lines going, like we have ley lines on the earth. Everybody's heard about ley lines. And the pyramids were built at the most powerful, the great pyramids at Giza I'm talking about. There's many, many, many pyramids. But they were built at the power spot, the main power spot on earth. Stonehenge is at one of those spots. I lived in Arizona for many years and spent a lot of time in Sedona, and there are vortexes in Sedona. It's a very powerful place, and there are underground bases up there, and people are seeing craft coming and going out of there all the time. But that was years ago, and I didn't know about it at the time. I was oblivious to it, but I was certainly aware of the vortex energy that was there because it was a great place to meditate. And the veil between the physical or material world and the spiritual world is very thin there. But at the point where these lines intersect are called nodes.
Mm-hmm.
And at these points, these portals are placed. And there's portals, natural portals, all over the earth and in space. And there's technology where they know how, they've got the technology, they can find these things and enter them, and boom, you know, you're 50 light years away instantaneously. It's known, and the ETs have said, the guy who was the head of the Israeli Space Defense Force, Chaim Eshed, came out just a few years ago and announced that governments have been meeting, having clandestine meetings with the ETs. And he said that the ETs said they would self-reveal, but only once we understood what space and spacecraft were really all about. And I think the average person, including myself, I may not know the answer to that, but the people working in these special access projects and have been for years have figured it out.
Wow. Wow, that is something. Now, you also talk about during World War II that there were certain types of operatives or operations going on. So can you talk a little bit about that time period and what activity was happening?
Well, there's a question as to whether we actually beat the Nazis in the end. And many say we did not, because they weren't, all of them were not beaten, that's for certain. But during the war, there was a spy program going on, as one might imagine. And the U.S. Navy had 29 German-speaking operatives that they dropped into Germany. One by one, they started returning, and they were reporting seeing all this technology, spacecraft, that was just mind-blowing. And the admiral, I can't think of his name, he didn't believe it at first, but with every single one of them came back, all 29 reporting the same thing. And this went up through the chain of command to William Forrestal, who was then Secretary of the Navy and later became the first Secretary of Defense in our country's history. And he was allegedly pushed out of a window at Bethesda Naval Hospital because he wanted to tell the public the truth. And he wanted to tell them about ETs. He wanted to tell them that we didn't beat the Nazis because they were all in in Antarctica. And they did indeed have a base down there. And also in 1947 was a big year. Admiral Byrd headed up a flotilla of ships that they sent down there, and they were going to run the Nazis out. And they were supposed to have been down there for 2 years. Well, they came back in 5 months, and they had had the heck beaten out of them. They lost several ships and men, and they encountered spacecraft with from two different directions. From one direction, they had Nazi insignia on them, and from the other direction, there was none. They were working and built a relationship with the reptilians, but the Nazis were ahead of all this stuff. In early 1920s, there was this woman named Maria Orsic. You can look this up. She was a beautiful woman, and she was a psychic. And she wanted, the story was she wanted to leave the planet. And she was having communication psychically with a civilization on a planet. They never really, they did reveal the name of the planet, but I never heard of it. Doesn't really matter. But they downloaded the blueprint to her to build a spacecraft. She started working with an engineer, and they built this craft. And they were flying and had left the planet in the 1920s. And the story is the Nazis had landed on the moon in the 1940s, early 1940s. The rest
Wow.
had been stranded here, and they got to the moon, and they were there when Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed. And that's where all the stories came, that came from Armstrong himself, and people with ham radios heard this conversation, this dialogue between Armstrong and Aldrin and ground, saying, My God, they're huge. They're huge. Talk about the spacecraft were parked along the rim where they had land. Yeah, and it was the reptilians. Have been here for a long, long time. And they've been here as long as we have. Well, now, take that back. They've been here 40, 50,000 years.
Wow. That's a long time. Now, one of the other areas that's covered is the idea of medical technology being suppressed. You indicate that, you know, there could be an app for your iPhone that can scan to the cellular level 400 times better than a CAT scan, detect cancer cells, and then using frequency, destroy them. So I would think that the pharmaceutical industry would not like that one bit.
No, they absolutely, nor the AMA. Yeah, we should be able to treat ourselves at home, and the technology doesn't have to be invented. It's there right now, and has been for some time, that they could put an app on your iPhone right now, and you scan over your body, just like, you know, you touch a button, and it goes into scan mode, and it will, the resolution is crystal clear, and as they said, 400 times better than a CAT scan. It sees right down to the cellular level, and you learn what cancer cells look like, and maybe there's no symptoms. It hadn't grown, it hadn't proliferated, but it's the early stages, right? You push another button, and it sends waves of energy or light. Light therapy is a big thing now, too. It's a huge thing because we are light. We're made of photons of light, and they're using that to heal pretty much everything. They had these beds. You lie in these beds, and they have these arms that come down out of the ceiling. And they got resolution. I mean, this is like science fiction stuff to us, but it's there right now. And the elite get to access it for their. There's a couple, and I'm not going to mention names, that I don't know how they're still alive, but now I do. That I consider evil people that, you know, could care less about the rest of us, but filthy, filthy rich, and they're staying alive.
Yeah.
Because of this technology that they have access to. But the drug companies and big industry are the ones that do not want this released, because it definitely will put them pretty much out of business. The doctors are still going to be needed for some things. You know, it's not going to put them out, but it sure would. It would take the drug companies down. They couldn't function. But we're taking medications. I have a pharmacy degree, Robert, and was in that business. I'm not proud of it, but I know a little bit about it. All right, and I'm telling you, we're taking medications that are doing more harm than good.
I believe that very much. And, you know, it seems to be that it seems to be creating even a more dependence on the drug industry instead of, you know, creating a healthy outcome.
Yeah. Instead of using holistic tools that we have, I don't watch TV, regular TV, hardly ever, but every time I do, it's commercial after commercial, you know. You take that, you know, this will help you to do this or help you to do that. It's take a pill. Take a pill.
Yeah.
You know, better life than chemicals.
Yeah. And what gets me is some of the side effects might be death. So, you know, go ahead and take it.
Well, most people don't. If you read the package insert, even aspirin. I mean, you'd never take it. Because if it's been reported one time during clinical trials, even if there's no proof that the drug caused the problem, they have to put it down. They have to list it. That's by law. But, yeah, a lot of these drugs, and especially when people are on multiple drugs and the drug interactions, one cancels out the effect of the other, and the doctors can't keep up with all this stuff. It was hard enough, 40, 50 years ago. But now, there was only maybe a half a dozen major drug companies and only a total of, I don't know, maybe 20, 25 in the 1970s. And now there's one on every corner peddling something, and doctors don't have time to see their reps, and they pick up what they can, but they're not getting the continuing education on all these pharmaceuticals because nobody could. That's why they're using computers. Because no way they could remember all the information that they need to know to say that what I'm prescribing is truly indicated and it's not going to cause any harm to my patient. But we have, the point is we have medical technology that most of us can't even comprehend. And it's been there. It's been available since the 1990s or before in some cases. And the bulk of it came from reverse engineering on these spacecrafts that they either captured or crashed or they shot down.
Yeah. Wow. Because, Harry, we are down to the last couple minutes. I mean, this time flies by when we're talking. So can you...
Quite a bit.
Yeah, we did. Now, can you tell us or the listeners what you hope that they're going to get from reading that part, the ET part of Imminent Shift?
Well, you get the history from, and when I say the history, I'm not going back to ancient times. ETs have been coming here for thousands of years. But in modern times, most people consider it started in 1947, but there was actually a crash before that, a couple of crashes before that, one in 1941 and the year before that in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. But most people consider the Roswell crash the beginning of the modern UFO history, and it will take you up pretty much to present on what has happened and what's been going on. It delves into the secrecy and how all this got started. And, my point is knowledge is power. Knowledge is power. And if you choose to remain ignorant on this subject that's coming to you right now, I mean, when the President of the United States orders the release of files, secret files on UFOs, this is only the beginning of what's coming. And they're going to self-reveal, the ETs. They've just been waiting on us. But it's coming. And for people that have no knowledge, they're going to be in trouble. I'm not trying to scare people or anything. I don't think we have that much to scare about. But they're going to have a hard time getting along because most of the people just don't know. Whatever Trump releases, you'll learn more reading Imminent Shift than the government will ever voluntarily teach you or release to you.
Yeah. It's really important. You know, it seems like we are quickly heading in that direction of the release or even the reveal, and that, there will be those who will be completely dumbfounded, because it really wasn't within their you know, their idea of even somewhat of a reality, let alone actually being a reality. So that when it happens, I think that it's going to create a huge shift in the human consciousness.
Well, the reality that we live in, and people have said we're lazy, we don't like change, we get in our routines. I'm guilty of it. We're all guilty of it to some degree or another. But, you know, the one thing the movie Disclosure, they did not. They took us to the point where the information was all released worldwide one day, Disclosure Day. But they didn't touch on the aftermath. And that would be a tough one to crack if they tried. The change that it's going to bring about in the world, you can't imagine. I can't even imagine. I mean, all the aspects of it. But the reality, what we call reality today, will be gone forever. A new reality will ensue.
It's going to be something, that is for sure.
Many say that will happen in 2027.
Wow. Just everybody hang on to your boots. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting ride.
Book, read this book, and at least you'll get enough knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Some way to decipher what's being told to you when it does happen.
Yeah. I agree.
Crazy too. You don't have to believe everything. I didn't, but I followed up with my own research, and most people just don't have the time to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that your book is a good source for that. So, Harry, this has really been another great conversation. I really want to thank you for your time and sharing with us your book and also the research and what you have found out.
Well, it's my pleasure, and it's an honor to be here. In any way I can help people, I'm all in favor of it. That's my only goal, is to enlighten people to the truth that has
Great.
Been. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone, again, today, my special guest has been Harrison Byers Newberry, author of Imminent Shift in Human Consciousness and Awakening to the ET Phenomenon. Again, you can find out more by visiting Harry's Instagram account, Harrison Byers, V-I-E-R-S. And in closing, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.